this interview.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about the foundation?
Okay, so basically, in a nutshell, we do all our programs. Our mission statement is to impact the area youth mentally, physically, and spiritually. So with that being said, to encompass all those areas in our programs. Our first program, we start with second and fourth graders, a one-on-one mentoring program. We pretty much have adopted an elementary school that we run once a week for an hour after school during the school year, and that's our mentoring program. We have, for middle-age kids, we have what we called our overnight character camp. So we use of course, we use football as a platform. We have one at the end of March, early April, which is about 125 kids for 4 days, 3 nights. And then we have one in November, which is a weekend. That's 3 days, 2 nights. And basically, what we do is, like I said, we use football as a platform, but we only teach football about 50% of the time we're there. We do character, team building, and then we have some chapel programs for the kids. We have a great coaching staff. We have chaperones, and so we put them up, and we're with them and everywhere from football sessions, rope courses, team building exercises, character traits. So it's and those are our basically middle school kids. One of them is pretty diverse. We've from the surrounding areas, inner city of Cincinnati, Dayton, just the whole area. Then the one in November is 100% Hispanic kids. And then our mentoring program is predominantly Hispanic. The school we've pretty much adopted, Roberts Academy, is pretty much, I'd say probably 90-95% Hispanic. So that's our elementary, middle school, high school kids. We have what we call our youth leadership seminar that takes place usually in October at Xavier University. We have usually close to about 100 high schools from the Cincinnati area, Southeast Indiana, Northern Kentucky. Pretty good reach with those 100 high schools, about 1,200 to 1,400 students at Xavier University here in Cincinnati. And basically, we do all-day event. We have motivational character speakers. We have breakout sessions where character is taught and talked about. And then after the day, we send those 100 schools out in the community with the challenge to initiate and put together community service projects. And we track those, and I get a chance to pick two of the winners, and I give them some money that they can use towards a project in their school. That's our leadership seminar. And then we have two types of scholarships. In April, we have what we call our Straight A Luncheon. And there's a great friend of ours who has several restaurants here in town, Jeff Ruby. And he gives us his restaurant downtown, Jeff Ruby Steakhouse. And Straight A, we encompass always academics, athletics, attitude, achievement. And a big criteria for those scholarship recipients is overcoming adversity. We have 18 that we honor at the luncheon, 9 male and 9 female. All 9 are finalists, and then we pick 1 male and 1 female winner. We bring in the kids, their most influential teacher. We recognize them, their parents. There's about 150 at that luncheon, so it's a really great setup at a top-notch steakhouse. And then for 16 of the finalists, we give them $2,000 first-time, one-time scholarships. And then the two winners, we give them $5,000. And then we have a great partner, Graduate Inc., John Jones, who we give the male winner a ring, and the female, we give her a nice pendant. That's our schedule. So 18 scholarships in April, and then our big event, our dinner golf, that takes place in June. And at our dinner, we give out 6 $20,000 scholarships.
Wow.
It's $5,000 a year for 4 years. So we give out a total of 23 scholarships a year. And then coming up here tomorrow night or Thursday night is our only recognition. What we do is, of course, since people, since I played football, people think that everything we do is athletic related. That's not necessarily true, but we do one recognition award, and that's our area offense and defensive lineman of the year. We have a great dinner here. The National Football Foundation does a big dinner, black tie dinner for the young people. It's called That's My Boy Award. They give it locally for a top student athlete, and they allow us to recognize our linemen there. So we take all 6 divisions in the Cincinnati area, offense and defensive linemen we recognize one in each division, Northern Kentucky, Southeast Indiana, and then we pick one big winner, an offense and a defensive lineman. And it's not, you know, football and your performance on the field is a big part of it, but your classroom and community service and a letter of recommendation with what type of person you are, characters, is also a big criteria for that award. So that's what we do at the foundation, and we're 12 years old. We've raised probably, I think, a little over $10 million in the 12 years. Very lean staff. I'm here full-time, don't take a penny. I probably give anywhere from 25 to 35 hours a week without, you know, it's just a passion of mine. Got three staff that do a tremendous job. We have a great internship program that we've had since the beginning. Local college students, anywhere from 4 to 10 at a time, that it's necessary for their graduation requirements, and we give them projects and they run. We utilize their gifts. So we have that internship program, got a great board, very engaged board, and then we have some tremendous volunteers in the community. So it's really a great team effort.
And well, and you know, you say, you know, obviously need for these programs to go, you guys need to get the funds. What kind of events do you guys run for fundraising?
Well, we basically don't do any fundraising. I'm the development guy. I go out and meet with CEOs, meet with companies. I do personal appearances for funds. Usually when I, any personal contracts I have, we also work in contracts with the foundation. You know, most people utilize their golf tournament as a fundraiser. I mean, we do raise some funds from our dinner golf tournament, but that's not, it's, I guess it would be a combination fundraiser, friendraiser, appreciation weekend. Our dinner usually runs about 500 to 600 people. It's totally comped at a top-notch facility here in town, the Manor House. Great meal. Really, the only expense we have there is if we bring in entertainment, and we're really good with cutting. You know, when you spend under 2% for the fundraising we do, you know, we really watch what we spend because we want to give away as much as possible. So that dinner takes place. I usually bring in 10 to 20 Hall of Famers. You have to be a Hall of Famer to get flown in for my golf tournament. And this will be our 12th year. In 11 years, I've not paid a penny to fly a guy in. We've had partners everywhere from Delta flying everybody in. Now I have a corporate partner who flies everybody in. So we eliminate that cost. Our golf is at TPC Rivers Bend, one of the top TPC courses in the country. Our tee packages are usually totally comped. Like I mentioned, our Hall of Famers come in. So we really, really cut down the cost. You know, if we lose, you know, our travel partner, you know, I'll eliminate bringing in guys, and I utilize more of the local celebrities, which is, I had 1 year of the 11 that I had to do that, and it still went great. To answer your question, I am the development guy, and the great thing about it is a lot of board members will accompany me and recommend different people that I meet. So I'm out there, and I it's a passion of mine. It's I love doing it. So that's we don't have, you know, we talked about doing fundraising events, but along with the fundraising events come costs, and I'm crazy about it. I want to raise as much as I can and give as much as I can away. And, you know, you kind of reach, I hate to bring up names, but I just saw a thing on the news this morning where a guy raised over $400,000 for an event, $5,000, and I just cringe, and I feel bad for those guys. You know, hopefully they're involved with what's going on with their name, and that's the thing I learned is if my name's going to be on it, I'm going to know exactly what's going on, and that's why I'm totally engaged in what I do here. And I know the money coming in, money going out. I know the programs, so I feel totally comfortable going. And I call it every year I usually have a CEO tour where I go and meet with a lot of CEOs and try to, you know, fill my passion and my mission with the foundation.
How important is it for the current, you know, the current alumni and as well as the current players in the NFL to take an active role in giving back?
I think it's very important. I think not only players, but I think people in general. I mean, it's something that I take seriously. I think we all have responsibility to give back, to be mentors, to, you know, to really use our platform in a positive way. And what greater platform? I mean, athletics, good or bad, I mean, we have the ability to use this platform in a mighty way. And, it's one of the things that early on in my career, I was like, okay, why? And I finally stopped asking why and just said, I'm going to do it in a positive way, because we do have great opportunities. I can say that a lot more guys are doing positive and great stuff than you hear about, because, quite frankly, who wants to hear about the guys that are doing great things other than, I mean, the guys that are, you know, the very few guys that are getting in trouble, that seems to, you know, create more buzz. But I can tell you from experience and from knowledge that there's a lot of guys doing some great things.
Can you talk about also, you know, the time and dedication, you know, you talked about before, you know the amount of man hours you put in, you're doing the CEO tour, and the efforts that you put in. Can you talk about just, you know, how difficult this was to really get off the ground at first?
Well, you know, the great thing for me, and I really don't, as I look through my playing days, and I've been retired 21 years, I don't think I could have done this as a player. That's why I didn't start this until, you know, 9 years after I retired, 8-9 years after I retired, because I wanted to be engaged. And I think about when I was playing, I was a husband, a father, and then playing. I don't think I would have had the time to put into this to really be where I am now with it, and where I wanted to be with it now. Because when I do something, I want to be engaged and want to know what's going on. I think that's, you know, again, I understand players doing it while they're playing because they're relevant. Some guys continue to be relevant after they're playing, and, you know, even bigger after they're playing. So I understand wanting to do it while you're playing, but I also understand how tough it is to really be engaged, and especially if it has your name on it. I think that makes it, because the people you need running it, the people you need, you know, surrounding you, the day-to-day, I mean, that's so important. So with all that being said, I did a lot while I was playing, but it was for other groups that already had their infrastructure in place, and they were doing, and I was just kind of an advocate and trying to help them, you know, with awareness, raising funds, where now it's, you know, it has my name on it, and I have to take ownership on it. So it would have been tough.
Can you also explain from the days from when you were playing to now on how the fundraising aspect and the giving back aspect has sort of changed?
Well, yeah, even when I first started this, I mean, you know, now I understand the understanding of there's certain things that people will give money to, but, you know, there's other things. I mean, it makes it much easier if you actually have your own programs in place, you know, because of the way I understand and look at things. If I had a company and I'm giving to a group that's actually taking the money and giving to another group, I mean, why wouldn't I just take the money as a company owner and give it to that group instead of, you know, passing it through the middleman? And, what's going on in the economy and taxes, and I mean, that has an effect too. I mean, you know, people are waiting to see, companies are waiting to see how much they actually have to give away. So that makes it even tougher with, you know, the whole, you know, landscape of the economy and things that are going on with small businesses and businesses, you know, so it's become much tougher. And so the great thing that we have to do, which I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, our funds went down just a little bit, you cut costs. And with that being said, the last 2 or 3 years have been probably the best 2 or 3 years of our foundation being able to impact the number of kids, because you realize if you're not, just use a figure, if you're not bringing in $2 million, you're bringing in $1.5 million, you can't be spending $2.5 million. So you got to cut down your expenses, and that's one of the things that, you know, I look at my staff and applaud them that we've been able to work together and say, okay, our giving's gone down a little bit, so let's cut prices. We negotiate, we work harder. you know, instead of having the course bill us and provide food for our golf tournament, we work the deal. We bring the dinner in that's comp. We bring on-course food that's comp, drinks comp. So now you eliminate thousands of dollars from, you know, money that you had to spend by donation. So the landscape is tougher, but you just got to be creative. And, again, to the family, we do the same thing. If you're not bringing in as much as you need, you don't spend as much. You cut your spending down. And it's just common sense. So that's, again, I applaud my staff, and the board, and us as a team for realizing that and doing that.
Can you also talk about now, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and talk about, you know, you said, you know, you were with the Bengals for a while, you know, and you know, you almost your whole career there. Can you talk about, you know, just the responsibilities of, you know, of an athlete, and especially a football player, being able to do some of the things you did? Obviously, you started this after you retired, but the current players who've been with teams and been with a community for a while, how important it is for them to be involved, just involved with that community, especially when there's a, you know, like you were there for a long time. Sadly, in today's NFL, you're not really in that one place for that many years. You know,
right.
Yeah. So
and even while they're playing, I mean, they're transient because of the dollars. I mean, you know, if you're playing, you know, and I'm not picking anybody, but if you're playing in a northern city, and you have a chance, you have so much money, you can buy a place in Arizona or Florida from January to, you know, April, whenever. I mean, that's what's happening. So at least what I've seen, the connectability, the ability for fans to connect, for players to connect with the community, isn't what it used to be. I mean, good or bad, I don't know, but it's, you know, I can pick up the phone and call 40 to 50 guys that I played with that still live in this community and are still doing a lot in the community. You know, there's some guys in this present day Bengals team that live here, but, you know, I guess that's the thing. I mean, it's not happening. It's still happening, but not as much. You know, to be able to go up to Buffalo, I go up to Buffalo just about every year and play in Jim Kelly's golf tournament. Jim Kelly lives in Buffalo. I mean, I'm sure he gets around and moves around a little bit when it's cold, but he lives in Buffalo, and, you know, there's a lot of guys that I go to their events that are living in the city that they played in for their entire career. You know, so it's a great opportunity. It's a great platform to play. And with free agency, it does make it tougher because, you know, you play 4 or 5 years, and then all of a sudden you're in another city. But while you're in that city, it's a great opportunity to have an impact on that community because, like I said earlier, good or bad, we as athletes have an opportunity to utilize in a positive, either way. I mean, you're going to be a great leader, you're going to be a bad leader, you're going to be a great influence or a bad influence. So you got to make that decision. And, I mean, what better place than, you know, the place where you play every Sunday and you have, you know, 60 to 85,000 rooting you on. You know, why not take advantage of that platform and be a part of that community?
What do you miss about your playing days?
I mean, there's no question that the competition, you know, lining up directly and looking another guy right in the eyes, you miss that. But then the camaraderie, I mean, the locker room, the traveling, being in camp. Well, we used to be in camp for a month, you know, being there. I mean, you wake up at 6, you're bed at 11 with the guys for 4 weeks. Just that whole, you know, the camaraderie, the togetherness, being in the locker room every day. I mean, you miss that, and you don't have that. I mean, you still have some of that through a lot of the events that you get a chance to be with together and reminisce. But I'd say that's probably the couple things, just the overall competition of the game and then the camaraderie.
Obviously, there's a lot of changes going on in the NFL right now with safety and concussions and different medical concerns. How do you, in your opinion, being a retired player, how do you look at this? Do you applaud the efforts? Do you think this is a little too late to be thinking this way? Or, you know, is it like about time type of attitude about trying to, you know, let these guys think about their future's life after football?
Well, I think it's good. I think that, you know, how quickly they, they really get after the concussions and you know what the players have to go through to get back in. I think that's great. I just hope that it continues and that, you know, it's just not because of the public outcry or the former player outcry that this is happening, but that it's truly a, you know, a mission and a passion of the people, you know. And I know Roger well enough, Commissioner well enough, that I think he truly, you know, is concerned about the former players. So I just hope more and more is done for the former players, that it's just not an attitude of, well, you know, you got these guys that played and they got a headache, so all of a sudden, you know, it's got to be, you know, game-related. I'm thinking, you know, my body aches every day, and I know it's related to the 13 years I played in the NFL. I mean, there's no question about it that it's, you know, it's not, you know, I'm sure some of it has to do with the fact that I'm 54, but I'm sure that, you know, it's for the 13 years I've played and 200 games, close to 200 games I've played. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and I just hope it continues to move in the right direction and more and more of the retired players, because quite frankly, every guy playing now is going to be a retired player sooner or later, you know, and they're going to be in the same, you know, there's not many George Blanda that played 26 years, so, you know, there's been a few Bruce Matthews and, you know, Clay Matthews and Jackie Slaters and Junior Seau that played close to 20, but, you know, not many get up 15 or above, so they're all going to be retired, they're all going to be young, and they're all going to, believe me, they're all going to be experienced what we're experiencing now, and so I hope that it continues to, but I like what's going on, I like how, you know, things are being done. I'm privileged to be on a advisory panel with John Madden and Ronnie Lott as the co-chairs. Got some former players, some GMs that Commissioner Goodell put together, the player safety advisory panel that we look at and see how we can keep this game as great as it is. I think it's the greatest team sport in the world, and to keep it, you know, as physical as intense, but to really make sure that keep the integrity and safety of the game moving. So I think there's a lot of moving parts to really make sure that we don't lose speed with this game. And I know a player said that, you know, down the road football won't exist. I totally disagree with that. I think football will continue to be played long before we're gone.
What advice do you give to parents who have concerns about their children playing football? One being, like we were talking about, with the economy being the way it is, the cost, because you have to pay for equipment, you have to pay for, you know, helmets, and then also for their safety. You know, what advice do you give parents and younger coaches at this point?
Well, I mean, there's options. I mean, you know, I didn't play tackle football until my freshman year in high school, and things worked out. My son didn't play tackle football until his freshman year in high school. It was a four-year starter at the University of Tennessee. I believe had the talent to go in the NFL. I played flag football from the age of 8 to 13. I don't want to discourage kids from playing, you know, tackle football, but if parents aren't totally comfortable, there's a lot of parents that are still going to allow their kids to play tackle football, and I think that's fine. But if the parents aren't crazy about their young kids, play flag football. I mean, they're going to learn the basic fundamentals of the game. They're going to learn what it's all about, and they still get a chance to play football. So there's options. I mean, you have the Junior Development League of the NFL, which is tackle. You have the NFL flag football program, which is flag. I mean, so there's options out there for kids to get the experience in the game. Even though I didn't play until my freshman year in high school, and I didn't even play the same position I ended up playing, you know, for over 20 years, it still helped me out with the whole, you know, feel of the game, the competitiveness, and what they expected you to, you know, play in flag football. So there's options. So I would, you know, it's going to be a tough one, I mean, because all the information that's coming out. So I know parents are going to be thinking twice about, you know, letting their kids play.
Can you talk about some of the highlights of your playing career, things that stand out in your mind from when you were on the field battling?
I guess there's no question playing in you know, the playoffs, playing in two AFC championship games and having them played at home. You know, anytime you can gain home field advantage and play in front of your fans, you know, your divisional playoff game and the AFC championship game, and then, you know, of course, you know, winning those two championship games and going to two Super Bowls. I mean, those have to be the highlights because that's what you work for. I mean, every year after the last game, I would take maybe a day off and start running and lifting again because I wanted to get to camp, get the regular season, get to the playoffs, and hopefully get to the Super Bowl. So, the two AFC championship games in 81 and 89 and then Super Bowl 16 and 23 were definitely a highlight of mine. And there's individual highlights that always, for a lineman to catch four touchdown passes, that had to be, highlight, and especially the first one, catching it against the Cleveland Browns and up in Cleveland and taking us into overtime and winning in overtime was a highlight. But I think, just getting a chance to play was a highlight because, quite frankly, a lot of people don't realize I only had one healthy season in college. I had three knee operations in 4 years. My senior year, got hurt in the second series, first game. Rehab, played in the Rose Bowl, so I played in one game my senior year. And then not to miss a game until my 11th year with the Bengals was a highlight because a lot of people had questions about my durability. And quite frankly, I mean, when you only play one full season in 4 years, it's natural. I didn't blame people for questioning, but to use that as an incentive and a motivator and make sure that, when I got drafted, I said my goal was to play 10 years. I got 13, so that was a highlight, too.
And not only that, but 11 Pro Bowl selections is
yeah, I mean, that, to be open Hawaii every year with the top guys and just kind of look around and say, wow, I'm strapping it up and Hog Hannah's next to me and Mike Webster's at center and, Dan Fouts taking snaps right behind me and I'm lining up to Kellen Winslow and, just on and on, seeing all the guys over there was, being coached by Chuck Noll when you're trying to beat them during the regular season and Don Shula and Chuck Knox, so that was pretty exciting.
you say to him, oh, this is what it feels like to be on your side. Oh, all right.
It's like, I like this.
And also, I have to ask the question also, what do you remember about your first game? Because we do, we're starting a new little segment on Back Sports Page called My First Game. We like to ask athletes and former athletes if they remember how much they remember of their first game and ask about as much detail if you can remember about your first professional game.
So you're talking regular season?
Regular season.
Okay. I remember like it was yesterday. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Leroy Selman, number 63, lining up directly across from me. It was one of the biggest storms, that I'd ever played in, rainstorm, lightning storm. It was against Leroy Selman and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was quite an introduction into the NFL. In fact, just going back a little bit, that was the second time I played against him in the first five games because we played the Buccaneers in the preseason as a rookie. Of course, you only played about a quarter or a half. It was a quick introduction into the NFL playing against, of course, Hall of Fame defensive end who we sadly lost at a young age. But it was one of those things like, okay, here we go. Time to learn. One of the best I played against, he's in my top two or three, Leroy Selman. I felt good because I wasn't, I didn't want to, wear a mask the next day. I wasn't that embarrassed.
Can you talk about the, back from when you were playing the during the week life of an NFL player, the non-game days regiment that you guys went through. Can you explain a little bit about that also?
Yeah, just to kind of start out right after the game, Monday we'd come in, we would lift and run and, watch the tape because we got graded on every play, every game. We went through that and then Tuesday was a day off. For me, I would usually come in, do a little lift and a little run on the day off. And then Wednesday, we started with game plan. We'd come in Wednesday morning, and the coaches would have been working hours and hours putting together a game plan for the next opponent. They would give that to us Wednesday morning. We would go through it, spend all morning going through game plan. And then, when I was playing, it was full pads on Wednesday. I mean, you're implementing the game plan. You're putting it in, and then you come in after practice, and by that time they had the videotape ready from practice. You would watch that, and you'd go home. Thursday was a nickel day. The same thing, the coaches would give you the nickel package, so you would review again and go through your game plan, and then all of a sudden you're putting in your nickel package against their nickel. Then Thursday practice, full pads, you're going through it again. And then Friday, supposedly a shorter day. You're putting in goal line, and then you watch tape again after practice. And then Friday you come in, and you, it was a shorter day, but you're still putting in goal line and short yardage. You're still the whole time reviewing the game plan, the nickel plan, and then you're out on the field, and we're going through goal line and short yardage. And, you know, it wasn't until late in my career that we still had, if we weren't full pads, we were helmets and shoulder pads, goal line, short yardage, still thumping pretty good. And we were usually done after practice and watching tape, usually 1:30, so it was 2-3 hours shorter on Friday. Saturday, if you were at home, you'd come in the morning. We would watch tape from Friday practice again, review. It would be a walkthrough, and then we're usually out of here by noon. If we traveled, we would be in here about the same time, and then we would break, and they, you know, either go to your home and get your travel stuff, or you bring your stuff and then go right to the airport. You leave Saturday afternoon, and then you're, you know, you're gone for about a little over 24 hours, because we usually flew back right after the game. So Tuesday was your day off. Other than that, it was, you know, work, get ready.
What do you like to do for fun? Obviously, you know, you have a business, and you also, you know, work with the foundation. But what do you like to do on your off time?
I golf a lot. I've got the golf bug, so actually, it was 39, 40 degrees, and I played 9 on Saturday, walked 9 Saturday in my club, and then played almost 18 on Sunday. So I'm a, you know, if it's 35 to 45 and it's not raining, I'm out there because it's still pretty nice weather. Not short sleeves now, but like we used to. But yeah, I like playing golf, family time. You know, we have 6 grandkids, 5 grandsons, a granddaughter. So family time is very important. My wife and I spend a lot of time together. We, you know, travel together and do things together. So, yeah, it's, I tell people that I run hard. I mean, I run hard working because I got, you know, I got the foundation. We have a corporate apparel company. I have just started a company with my son, a marketing ad agency. I'm working with him and got a private label coming out and still do a lot of speaking as much as I can and do stuff. So I do run hard, but I you know, I'm just going through my calendar now and scheduling all my little 2-3 day trips and where my wife and I will get away. You know, what we do is we get invited to some golf tournaments. I was just looking at Freddie Blitnikoff, the old Raider, in late April, and we'll, you know, take probably 2 or 3 days extra. And then, you know, in July, I do a camp at my high school, and then I have an event in, with the Gallo family, and this year it's in Santa Barbara, so we'll... So, you know, like I said, yeah, I don't just sit around because I love working, but I do understand... taking time to relax. I don't. It's not hard for me to relax.
Yeah.
So.
Do you watch any other sports?
You know what? I do. I was a big NBA fan. Not as big anymore. Growing up in LA, I was a big Lakers fan. Wilt Chamberlain through the Showtime with Jabbar and Magic. I've kind of tapered off the, you know, NBA. I love watching college basketball, especially March Madness, college football. I really enjoy baseball. Baseball was my first love growing up. I played a year of baseball at USC. I'm a big Reds fan now. I know manager Dusty. I know ownership. I've gotten to know some of the players. I watch a lot of golf. You know, I have it set up with my workout in the basement. I have TVs, and if I'm doing cardio, whatever I'm doing, I'm watching. On Sunday, I watch the tournament. And just dream about playing at Dove Mountain, which I just had a meeting with a friend, and it looks like he knows the guys that own it. So we might get a chance to go to Dove Mountain out in Tucson. But, yeah, and I, you know, I do. I'm into UFC, which, you know, you talk about the dangers of football. Now I'm watching UFC championship fighting. So I've been a big boxing fan. I love watching boxing. So, yeah, I'd say I watch quite a bit of other sports.
Do you think that this is totally off topic, but that's okay. I'd love to get your opinion on this. I have a radio show and I talk about this all the time. I personally think that mixed martial arts has taken over boxing, and the boxing has now become the second fiddle to MMA and UFC. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, it's amazing because my frustration comes from the lack of. I guess big fighters and the whole judging of boxing. I mean, in MMA and UFC, I don't think there's a question of who wins the fight when it's over. And I'd have to agree. I mean, there's more buzz, I think, about, you know, Dana White and that whole crew has done a phenomenal job, and now they're showing, you know, some of it live, you know, not, you don't have to pay for it sometimes, and then you have your pay-per-view. So I tell you what, I know it's for a huge boxing fan like myself. I mean, I go way back in boxing, and I still love watching it. I mean, it's kind of taken over my viewership, so I can speak from a personal standpoint.
Yeah, I think also, like, again, Dana White has done such a good job of marketing the product, not the athlete, whereas boxing would always be promoting Tyson, Buster Douglas, Evander Holyfield, George Foreman.
Right.
Now, you know, Dana is doing a nice job of the product. Like, Brock Lesnar was a very marketable fighter for UFC, but he, you know, Dana was smart enough not to get behind him because he has a reputation of fizzling out and so on and so forth. So you can't promote. So he promotes the product, and I think that's a
exactly.
huge, and that's marketing 101. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why the NBA is having a very, very difficult time right now, just for the simple fact that you're marketing Kobe and LeBron, and you're not marketing your smaller markets, and they're suffering for it.
Well, I'd love to. Okay, I got a 10 that I got to get to, and
for some reason,
Rogan, I didn't watch Fear Factor a whole lot, but I enjoy watching him on the fight, so it's a great announcer.
Yes. Well, Anthony, I appreciate you taking a few minutes with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. When
these pieces go up, because I'm splitting them up into three different pieces, the foundation, your career, and then some little things that we talked about, I'm going to send everything to Sarah, and Sarah, of course, will send everything to you.
Okay, great. Sounds good.
Anthony.
Hey, great talking to you. Have a great day.
Hey, Anthony, if you wouldn't mind, if it's okay with you, I'll contact Sarah if you'd like to come on the radio program sometime. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, why don't we see? Yeah, just contact her and just kind of give her the times, and then we'll work. Hopefully, work towards that.
Excellent. I appreciate it.
All right. You take care. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye.